I didn't do it, says former CIA agent Larry Devlin, referring to what he describes as the erroneous belief that he was behind the assassination of Patrice Lumumba. Devlin became the CIA station chief in the Congo in July 1960, just 10 days after the Congo received its independence from Belgium and Patrice Lumumba became the first elected prime minister of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Just a few weeks later, Lumumba's government was overthrown in a coup led by the head of the Congo's army, Joseph Mobutu. Lumumba was arrested by Mobutu's men and later murdered under mysterious circumstances. Mobutu remained head of the army until 1965, when he led another coup and took over as president. Larry Devlin has been credited with or blamed for involvement in that coup, but he insists he was not consulted or in any way involved. This was during the Cold War, when many African countries were involved in proxy wars between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. Mobutu was seen as sympathetic to the West, Lumumba as leaning toward the Soviets. Larry Devlin tells his story in the new memoir, Chief of Station, Congo. He says that although he wasn't involved with the assassination of Lumumba, he was actually assigned with that task. He received a message from CIA headquarters that a person identifying himself as Joe from Paris would arrive in 1960. Here's what happened when Joe from Paris arrived.
He told me that he had had instructions. He had received instructions to tell me that I was to assassinate Patrice Lumumba. I'd been in the business by that time over 11 years, and I'd never heard of such a thing happening, and I certainly did not want to become involved. But I listened to him. I said, on whose instructions do you give me these orders? And he said, the instructions come from the President Eisenhower. And I said, did you hear him? Did he give those instructions to you? And he said, no. I heard that from Dick Bissell. Dick Bissell, at that time, had the title of Deputy Chief of Operations. Deputy Chief Plans, excuse me, at that time was his title. Bissell had assured Joe from Paris that this was the case and that he was to carry out these instructions. Joe from Paris happened to be a very competent and highly regarded chemist. And he pulled out a little package and said, you should have this, and it has the various poisons which you can use. And he explained each one to me. The one I remember easiest was it was in a toothpaste, and all I had to do was get the toothpaste into the Mumba's bathroom, and when he washed his teeth the next time, it would take care of him. My immediate reaction was, I don't like this operation. One, it's not necessary. Two, it's morally wrong. Three, there's a great danger to the United States and to CIA specifically, my organization, because if I fail in this and I'm caught, it's just going to cause a bonfire all around the world. And all of Africa will turn against us. So will much of Europe. So will much of Asia, particularly South Asia. It just seemed to be wrong.
Okay, so you thought this was morally wrong and that it would backfire on the United States and the CIA, but Joe from Paris told you that the president had ordered you to do this, so what did you do?
I used that old bureaucratic operation of stalling. I didn't say no. I didn't jump with joy either, of course, but I didn't indicate that I did not approve, because I knew that if I refused, I would be recalled immediately, and that someone else would be sent out who would be willing to take on the job. I felt that I already had some very good operations going, and that person would perhaps not be prepared to pay attention to them and would only concentrate on the elimination of Lumumba.
What effect has it had on your life to be associated with this assassination, even though you say you didn't carry it out?
Indeed, I did not carry it out. I repeat the fact that I did not carry it out. It's not been easy because there have been, people, I think people sometimes when they hear that I was the chief of station Congo when Lumumba was murdered and they've heard that CIA allegedly was supposed to have killed him, and they think that that's probably what happened. People get a little bit nervous about being near me, I suspect. Although, little by little, that sort of has disappeared with history. After all, that was almost 47 years ago.
Although you say you didn't assassinate Lumumba, you did cooperate in the coup that removed him from office. You made a deal with Mobutu, who wanted to overthrow him, and did. There were two Mobutu coups. This was the coup in the early 60s. What was the deal?
The deal was he just said that he wanted to, my guarantee that the United States government would recognize the government which he planned to put in power if and when he went ahead with this coup plan, but he would not go ahead with the plan unless he was guaranteed that the United States government would recognize this new government.
And you gave him America's guarantee?
I did not have the authority to do so, but I thought, well, this is what I've been instructed to do to get... It's not instructed to do, but I'd already had instructions before the assassination man came up that we should try and do anything to remove Lumumba from power. So I thought this will contribute to that. And if it's decided in Washington that we do not wish to support a military coup, then I'll have ample opportunity to contact him because he won't be doing it for at least a week.
So I should say, just to clarify, there were two Mobutu coups. This was the first one in the early 60s.
This was September 60, 14th September 60, and the next one was the 24th of November 1965.
There were so many proxy wars in Africa in the 60s and 70s in which, the Soviets were backing one side and the Americans another side. And in the Congo when you were there, Mobutu was seen as being friendly to America and the West. Lumumba, who was assassinated, was seen by the United States as being more sympathetic to the Soviet Union. So the United States backed Mobutu. And he, a lot of people say he turned his country in the intervening years into a paradigm of everything that went wrong in post-colonial Africa. So in retrospect, do you think it was a mistake for the United States to support him?
No, I do not. At the time, I certainly felt very strongly that that Lumumba was a danger indirectly to the United States because the Soviets were very clearly setting out to establish a position of, if not of control, at least of great influence within the country. Their objective was always control, but if they failed in that, at least to develop great interest, influence. And it was part of my job to try and prevent that. In fact, it was a very key factor in my assignment.
But in the process, the Congo ended up with a long rule by Mobutu, who turned into quite a dictator.
Yes, he became it was certainly not a purely... he had all the trappings of a democratic government, but it was he was the key factor. He was, if you will, a dictator. But no different than so many of the African countries at that time or that existed at that time or that have come to power since then. When he took power, I really believed, and I think he was certainly, he was only 29, he really believed in his country. He was unhappy to see the Soviets in the military camp authorized by the prime minister to attack, say that the only true democracy in the world was the Soviet Union and they had to be friends with the Congo and et cetera, along that line, typical Soviet propaganda. I think he was a nationalist. He'd worked on an underground newspaper before the independence, seeking independence, and as he put it to me the night we had our talk, he said, I don't want to give up one colonial master for another.
When you were the head of station for the CIA in the Congo, what was your official identity there?
I was a consul of the United States because I was assigned to this post shortly before independence when it was a consulate general. So when I went out as a consul, as the consul, and remained that such. Happily, I had there was a legitimate, if you will, a foreign service officer who served as my vice consul, who handled all the paperwork and issuing of visas and that sort of thing.
I'm going to ask you a question that I feel like I need to ask. Because as a spy, you're so good at deception, because that's part of what you have to do, should we believe everything that you're telling us? Do you know what I mean? It's like I'm always so wary of interviewing former CIA agents, because you just I always feel like if you've made your career deceiving people, how do I know that you're absolutely telling the truth now?
Well, I think you have to sort of, one, start with the assumption that possibly I might be telling the truth, which indeed I am at this time. That was one reason for writing my book, mm-hmm. is that I get tired of hearing all sorts of things that I allegedly had done. You know, I'm accused of doing all sorts of things. There's been a book recently, a few years ago, which I'm referred to as a murderous Larry Devlin. I got tired of that. That's why I wrote the book. When I joined the service, it was because I had originally planned to try and teach at the university level. I'd obtained my master's degree and completed all the coursework required for the doctorate and was preparing to write my dissertation when one of my professors asked me to drop in on a Sunday, and he said he had someone he wanted me to meet, and it turned out it was McGeorge Bundy, who later became the National Security Advisor for Presidents Kennedy and President Johnson. He was there attempting to recruit people that he felt would fit into this new organization, the CIA. I accepted because I was impressed. He made the point that we had to fight a Cold War in order to avoid a hot war. And having been involved in a hot war for all too long, I went through the Mediterranean and European campaigns in World War II. I agreed that we had to do anything to avoid anything we could do to avoid an atomic war was fair game, and I therefore enlisted. So I felt that what I was doing was a good thing. All that is, except of course when I was requested to assassinate someone that I did not approve of.
And speaking of that order that you assassinate Patrice Lumumba when you were station chief for the CIA in the Congo, who did give the order? Do you know now? You were told that the President Eisenhower, had given the order, but do you really know for sure now
no,
who gave it?
No, I do not know for sure. As many of your listeners may be aware, when it came out in 1975, President Ford made a slip of tongue and let go that the CIA had been involved in assassination matters. And it became a very, both a political and a congressional problem. The Senate appointed a special committee headed by Senator Church to investigate the matter. I've read most of the reports that were produced by that committee, and it seems quite clear that I think, if you remember, there was a king of England who said, will no one rid me of that priest? Speaking of a matter, this is a historic matter. Well, I think probably the president must have indicated that he was dissatisfied with the fact that Lumumba was still there in office and we hadn't found a way to remove him from office. In any case, I believe it was interpreted by Dick Bissell, who was then the deputy director of plans, mean that the president wanted him assassinated. Now, during the meeting of the committee, met for some weeks, the president's, Mr. Gray, who was the president's national security advisor at that time, said absolutely not, that the president never would have done such a thing. Other people who were present at the meeting where he is alleged to have indicated he wanted him something done said they interpreted that any means, fair or foul, to get rid of him.
So you still don't really know whether there really was such an order or whether it was just a misinterpretation of something the president said?
No, I don't. You have it exactly. It could have been, he could have made it, the decision, the order, have extended the order, or it could have been a misinterpretation.
Now, the way you described it, you joined the CIA out of idealistic reasons, and you know, you wanted to prevent a hot war from breaking out. Was it difficult to remain idealistic in the kinds of situations you were put in the Congo?
I did not have any problem about that. I felt that I was doing what was necessary. I was contributing, not doing. I was not all by myself achieving this. The Soviet efforts to move into the Congo were viewed both by Washington and by me and by the ambassador. Most of the people, I believe, in the embassy felt the same thing, that the Soviets were making a major effort to take over the Congo in an effort to take over as much of Africa as they could to gain control of it. The object of, if you will, long-term object might have been, we didn't know, but it seemed a likely possibility, that if they could get further north from the Congo, they could get into a position where they would put planes and rockets in such a position as to outflank NATO on the south. In other words, to control they could control militarily the Mediterranean.
What's it like to spend many years doing work that you can't really tell anybody about?
Well, it's sometimes a bit difficult particularly when you have a family. I can recall it when I would come home sometime and tell my wife that, oh, so-and-so, someone was a friend or someone with whom we'd served abroad, had just been made an ambassador or a deputy chief of mission, whatever the title they'd recently achieved. And I'd look over at my poor daughter would sort of be looking down. I knew what she was thinking. Everybody gets promoted but my daddy.
She didn't understand that was just a cover.
No. She felt so sorry for me.
My dad's a loser.
Yes. So, and later, when she was so happy when she found out where I worked, that I wasn't...
When were you able to tell her that?
Well, actually, she learned quite young. She was only, I don't remember, in her early teens, when we were going back to my second tour in the Congo, and my wife and daughter took a physical elsewhere, not at the CIA. And at the end, when they turned in the papers and forms they'd filled out, etc., the woman said, "What cover is your husband under? State, Army, Navy, aid, or something like that?" So my daughter kept saying, "What does she mean? What is Daddy's cover? What's this mean? What does this mean?" So when I got home that night, my wife said, "You must talk to your daughter about the facts of life." And I said, "No, I'd rather have you do that." And she said, "No, not those facts, where you work." And so I had a little talk with my daughter, and she was just delighted. I think she thought I was 007 or something like that. And she was, to the best of my knowledge, she never revealed where I worked or did anything like that. And as you may have noticed if you read my book, that the fact she saved my wife's life and my life... my life certainly on two occasions.
Well, it's good to have a brave daughter.
I do indeed. I'm very, very proud of her.
Well, Larry Devlin, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Well, it's been my pleasure to be here, Terry. I have listened to your program so many times. I have enjoyed it many, many times. And I never expected to be interviewed by you, but I've enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
Larry Devlin's CIA memoir is called Chief of Station Congo. You can now download podcasts of Fresh Air on our website, freshair.npr.org.